from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Tuesday, April 28, 2026. I'm Eric Teal. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles Monday night said the City Council would discuss two controversial topics at its May 11th meeting: the new Interstate 77 toll lanes and data centers. Steve Harrison has this report.
Lyles agreed to place the I-77 toll lanes on the agenda after being pressured by the Black Political Caucus, which opposes the project. City Council members have been trying to reach a compromise to allow the highway widening to move forward without disrupting historically Black neighborhoods near Center City. On data centers, City Council member Dimple Ajmera pushed for more aggressive regulations. She asked to hold a public hearing on data centers in early June. That could be the first step to a moratorium on any new ones being built in the city. Council members tied 5-5 on whether to hold that public hearing, and Lyles broke the tie by rejecting it. Council members will instead just discuss the issue next month. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
The Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools Board of Education will vote tonight on the 2026-27 budget. It's just one item on the agenda for a busy meeting. James Farrell has more.
The CMS board will vote on Superintendent Crystal Hill's recommended $2.1 billion spending plan. It includes a $699 million request for Mecklenburg County, about $31 million more than last year. That funding would go toward a 5% increase to the local teacher salary supplement, pay raises for some non-teaching staff, and new devices for students. There are also some cuts to the central office due to state budget uncertainty, and Hill has said the district plans to hire 200 fewer employees this year due to enrollment declines. Hill will also make her official recommendation for changes to the district's magnet programs. The district is proposing reducing the number of magnet themes available from 16 to 6. James Farrell, WFAE News.
Democrats in North Carolina's House of Representatives want new rules requiring data centers to pay for the costs of providing the electricity they need. That's just one of the changes proposed in a new bill. Adam Wagner reports from Raleigh.
Democrats' proposal requires the developer of any new data center to report information about their electricity demand, how much water they plan to use, and how they plan to cool their servers. Under the bill introduced Monday, developers also wouldn't be able to claim any incentives from state government or receive property tax abatements from local governments. Representative Lindsay Prather is a Buncombe County Democrat.
If a company wants to build a data center in North Carolina, they can. They must simply pay their own way and stop shifting the cost onto you, me, and families like ours.
The legislation would also require large data centers to generate at least a quarter of their electricity from carbon-free sources. The Democrats' bill appears unlikely to become law, as Republicans control both chambers of the General Assembly. Adam Wagner, North Carolina Newsroom, Capitol Bureau.
South Carolina's measles outbreak is officially over. Eli Portillo has more.
The South Carolina Department of Public Health said Monday that a total of 997 cases were recorded. The biggest U.S. measles outbreak in 35 years almost exclusively affected unvaccinated people. More than 90% of cases were in children. Spartanburg County was the outbreak's epicenter with 940 cases. State data show that only 89% of school children in Spartanburg County have all their required immunizations, the state's lowest rate. Department of Health Deputy Director Dr. Brandon Traxler said unless that changes, more outbreaks will happen.
If we don't continue to see increases in vaccination, I'm worried that we could see another large, maybe not this large, but hopefully not, but another large outbreak.
It's been 42 days since the last new case, which is double the measles virus incubation period, the technical condition for declaring an outbreak over. Eli Portillo, WFAE News.
A second Mecklenburg State House member is leaving the Democratic Party after losing their re-election bid last month. Steve Harrison reports.
Last week, Carla Cunningham announced she was switching her registration from Democratic to unaffiliated. She lost the Democratic primary after Democratic Governor Josh Stein endorsed her opponent, Rodney Sadler. Progressives called for her ouster after she sided with the GOP to override some of Stein's vetoes. On Monday, Asif Majid announced that he, too, is switching from Democratic to unaffiliated. He lost his primary to Valeria Levy. In a statement, he said that, as an independent, quote, "I am free to evaluate each issue on its merits and advocate without constraint." Majid had voted with Republicans to override a Stein veto of a bill that said there were only two state-recognized sexes and genders. Both Cunningham and Majid will serve until the end of the year. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
Senate Leader Phil Berger wants to keep new property revaluations from going into effect this year. Adam Wagner reports from Raleigh.
Berger wants to pause revaluations to try to buy homeowners relief while the General Assembly works to address property tax hikes.
They'll have to go back to the old numbers and do their budgets using the old numbers to give us the time to look at the problem.
Berger, a Rockingham County Republican, says the moratorium would need to become law by mid-May. County boards need to approve their budgets by the end of June. Guilford County is one of 12 that have completed revaluations this year. Berger represents part of the county and says he's heard from people who are shocked at significant increases in their property values. Skip Alston chairs the Guilford County Board of Commissioners. He says tax bills aren't final because the county hasn't updated its property tax rate.
That's yet to be determined. And we as local elected officials should be allowed to make that decision.
A state house committee did not introduce the moratorium in its own set of tax relief proposals. Adam Wagner, North Carolina Newsroom, Capital Bureau.
Both North and South Carolina remain in extreme drought conditions. Kenneth Lee has more on Charlotte Water's next steps.
Starting last week, the utility asks customers to take action by limiting outdoor watering and avoiding washing hard surfaces. The utility follows a low inflow protocol guided by the Regional Drought Management Advisory Group. Triggers are based on river and stream levels, along with data from the U.S. Drought Monitor, and are evaluated twice a month. If conditions worsen, officials could move to stage two, which would bring mandatory restrictions for residents, businesses, and the broader community. The next update on restrictions is expected Friday. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
Charlotte Douglas International Airport is teaming up with UNC Charlotte to test new technology aimed at improving how airports are built and maintained. Kenneth Lee has more.
Charlotte's airport and the university's Aviation and Innovation Research Institute are launching what they call the nation's first instrumentation and digital twin program. It's tied to a runway under construction. The effort will embed sensors in the airport's fourth parallel runway, collecting real-time data on pavement performance and maintenance needs. Officials say the information could help the Federal Aviation Administration improve runway design standards nationwide. The nearly $6.5 million project is supported in part by a $2 million federal grant. Airport leaders say the partnership also gives UNC Charlotte students hands-on research opportunities. The runway opens in fall 2027. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
10 North Carolina community colleges are spearheading a statewide expansion of high-impact electrical workforce training. The Careers Electric Training Network is designed to increase enrollment in electrical systems technology programs by 20% at each selected school over the next 3 years. In an announcement Monday, Central Piedmont, Catawba Valley, Gaston College, Rowan Cabarrus, and Wilkes were among the community colleges chosen to participate. Each institution will get up to $250,000 in flexible, performance-based funding to modernize curriculum, enhance recruitment, and provide student support services. WJZY reports a car crashed into the Pineville Town Hall and Library last night around 9:30, and that the driver has been pronounced dead. Firefighters and police were still on the scene early Tuesday morning. There's no word yet what led to the incident. The Carolina Panthers wrapped up the NFL draft over the weekend, selecting 7 players, including 2 offensive linemen, to help replace departing centers and the injured left tackle Ike Mekwonu. Wide receiver, defensive backs, and a linebacker were also picked. Many draft analysts gave the Panthers high marks, not only for who they picked, but the trades and value they are perceived to have gained. Here's head coach Dave Canales during a post-draft press conference.
It's going to be the same thing every year. You know, how can we make the 2026 Panthers the best possible unit that we can make it? And if we have guys that, you know, bring a certain skill set at any position to give them a chance to compete and be out there, you know, we just feel like it elevates the whole group.
The Panthers also signed at least 8 undrafted free agents, including Duke defensive lineman Aaron Hall, wide receiver Malik Mega from Coastal Carolina, and Georgia Tech quarterback Haynes King.
Current players are participating in organized team activities. Mandatory minicamp is scheduled for June 9th through 11th. North Carolina is approaching its 8th month of drought, and it seems increasingly likely that we'll see mandatory water restrictions put in place, something the state hasn't seen since its worst drought on record in 2007. Zachary Turner spoke with Brian Walsh, the Vice President of Regulated Renewables at Duke Energy, to learn what we learned in 2007 and what folks should expect as the drought continues.
Are we seeing the same levels of impacts in water scarcity that we experienced during 2007 as we approach that rainfall deficit?
Well, we're not there yet, but it's certainly something that we have to have on our mind. And I would say that the good news is that we have a historical playbook that we've seen from 2007 through 2009. We have a protocol that drives when we declare certain low inflow stages. And so initially, stage zero is just monitoring. We just declared stage one recently, which asked for some voluntary conservation. We will likely get to stage two at some point in May, which has more mandatory conservation. But I think to go back to your question about the history, we were in stage three, which has certainly much more severe cutbacks in water usage and more required conservation. That was back in 2007 through 2009 for over 460 days. And if you think of our role at Duke, we want to maintain the ability to still provide good electric generation. And we also have to work with our partners to make sure drinking water supplies for over 2 million people are not impacted.
You mentioned that stage two might be on the horizon for us in May. How would homeowners, how would folks that are operating small businesses experience some of those mandatory water restrictions?
This would involve that there would be certain times that you could irrigate your lawns, and there would be requirements on only certain days of the week you'd be allowed to do that. That would probably be the most the initial thing you would see. Also, required rec flows from our license do get suspended during stage two. So people that might be wanting to recreate on our lakes would see that. But I think that they're already seeing that some boat ramps are being impacted because the lake levels have gotten low. I was out at the Lake Wiley Buster Boyd access area, and we had two of our four ramps already shut down because of the lake level there.
What are you seeing on the horizon for this drought?
We're doing our best to guess, right, with some really smart scientists and meteorologists. But one thing I did hear is that as we get to later in May and into June, there may be some more humidity that could end up, ending up in the area with some higher humidity days. That would be a good sign because maybe that brings more thunderstorms. Maybe that brings more extended showers.
Speaking of rain, we got a little bit over the weekend. How much of a dent did this make in the drought situation?
Unfortunately, not much. This to get out of the drought, it will not just be a weekend weather event. We need some prolonged rain to really help replenish all of these basins. And there's quite a bit of storage that we are down. So I'm telling folks, if be happy when we get rain. It's always going to be good. But, if you're looking at being inches behind each month, month over month over month, it takes many months of being inches ahead to make up that difference.
And how can folks help?
Well, I tell you, conserve when you can. Starting that shower and letting it run for 5 minutes just to make sure it's hot enough is probably not the best thing we should do. I'm telling my daughters that right now. I tell folks, if you right now, while it's still voluntary, can avoid, watering your lawn 2 days a week and cut down to one for a short amount of time, that we'd love to see people do that. We oftentimes tell people take showers versus baths. Don't turn the faucet on while you're getting ready to shave and just let it run. Any little thing we can do for all of our users, a gallon here, a gallon there among all of our users will add up and certainly help us.
Excellent. Brian, thank you so much. I really appreciate you making time to talk with me.
My pleasure, Zach. Thank you.
WFAE's climate coverage is supported in part by grants from the Salamander Fund and Green South Foundation. And for Tuesday, April 28th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.